On this episode, I'll be going over the trajectory that you should have being a real estate investor, and I'll be going over how to kind of maximize the investments that you have to take money out, move it around so that you can get the best return that you possibly can while investing. Let's get into it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode. Head over to my Instagram at Jake Myers. I will be giving away hats and books to those who submit questions via DM on my Instagram for me to answer on this podcast. So I'll be posting about that here soon. I have some custom hats made for the pod and the book I wrote called Evergreen. It's a beginner's guide to real estate investment. I'll be also giving away those together for those who submit some questions. So get in there and send me some questions so that I can get some answers out on this pod. On this episode, I'll be going over kind of the trajectory of a new real estate investor, what you can kind of expect to go through as time passes and you build your portfolio, and what moves to make to maximize that portfolio, and when. I'm kind of going through some changes right now. I'm trying to get some bigger properties and kind of trade in some of my smaller ones to make and maximize my returns and just kind of grow my portfolio bigger in 2023. So I'm going through some changes there. I'm going to kind of go over that, what that looks like, and what to expect in the future if you are just getting started on your investment journey. So the first way that like a lot of people get started is something called house hacking, which is you buy a house and then you rent out a room inside or a couple rooms to some friends to help cover the mortgage. And then at one point you would move out of that property and rent the whole thing out and move on to the next. Now, this is a really popular way to get started because when you buy a property and you live in it as a personal residence, you can get something called an FHA loan, which is the Federal Housing Administration. They basically guarantee that loan. So you pay something called private mortgage insurance, which is basically just a little side insurance policy on the mortgage that says you're going to pay. So if you don't pay, then these mortgage companies can use that money to recoup some of their losses if you default on that loan. Now, it's only $100 or $200 a month. It usually pencils out because the interest rates are a little bit better on FHA loans as well. So it can be a really cool way, but there's some tricky stuff to know when you're doing FHA, as in you can never get rid of that private mortgage insurance. Once you have an FHA loan that has private mortgage insurance on it, you'll never be able to take that off. That's why I typically recommend a conventional loan. You can get a conventional loan at 3% down or 5% down even. And those of you who don't know how to get a 3% down conventional loan, just talk to your lender. And if your lender doesn't know, call another lender, because it is possible. And a lot of people I've heard say you cannot get a 3% down conventional loan. They think that 3.5% is the minimum. But that's just FHA. So you can get a 3% down conventional. And this way, when you have 20% equity in the property in the future, you can actually call that mortgage insurance company or mortgage company and ask them to remove the private mortgage insurance. They will usually send an appraiser out. It might cost you $700 or $800. And if the appraiser appraises the house at 20% above what your mortgage amount is, then you can take that private mortgage insurance off. And conventional private mortgage insurance is usually about 60% or 70% of the FHA mortgage insurance as well. So it doesn't even hurt as bad when you have to pay it. The conventional loan just usually comes with a little bit of a higher interest rate because that Federal Housing Administration, the FHA, doesn't guarantee that loan. So they want to make a little bit higher of a return on that. So when you get a low down payment mortgage, you do have to live in it, anything under 20% usually, unless you can get a hold of a credit union or some private money lenders or portfolio lenders to help you out and give you maybe a lower down payment option. But standard Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac guidelines state under 20%, you really got to live in it. So you buy a house for yourself, personal residence, and you live in it, you move a couple of your friends in to the bedrooms, and that you charge them rent, and that covers your portion. And that allows you to save even more. So if you're renting a house, let's just say you're living by yourself, or let's just say you're living with two friends and your rent is $1,500 and you each pay $500. You go out and you buy a house that's $250,000. Let's just say your mortgage is $1,500. Because it is a house with a backyard, a nicer setup, maybe you can charge them $600 each. That's $1,200. And then you only have to pay $300. That will let you save up more money to be able to buy the next property in the future, as well as all the tax benefits and all the other gains. People don't realize how many other gains there are when you buy a property just to live in yourself. Even if you don't have a super high income, or you don't own your own business, or you don't have all these things moving and shaking, you can still write off the private mortgage insurance, the mortgage interest, and a couple other things. In some cases, you can depreciate it, but a lot of times it has to be an investment property. But there's a lot of cool tax things that you can do by just owning a property. So that will help you out as well on your tax return and income-wise. And then you'll also get the loan pay down, which is the amount that goes towards the principal every month. And you'll get some equity and appreciation as well when you're living there for a while. So it's a super, super popular thing to do, and I highly recommend it. If you can buy a property that has a 1 to 4 units, you can also do that as a house hack, where they don't necessarily live inside the unit with you and rent the bedrooms out. So you can actually buy a 4-unit little complex, which is technically a small multifamily property, and you can put 3% down conventional loan and live in one of those units, one of the 4. And the really cool thing is you're probably thinking, well, I don't think I could ever qualify for a 4-unit complex with my income. But if you have those other 3 units rented and you have signed leases, you can count that rental amount of incoming cash as debt against the property. So if you have to have a debt to income ratio that's 40% and you don't make a ton of money to be able to afford the house, you can count that income that you'll be making from the other 3 units as income to you to help offset that mortgage payment. So if on a 4-unit complex, your mortgage is $4,000 and each 3 of the units is paying $1,000, and then you would have to pay $1,000 for your unit, they would count that other $3,000 from the other tenants as income to you, and you'd only have to qualify to be able to afford $1,000. So it's really cool, and still you can get a property manager, you can be hands-off. I like to kind of I don't really like people to know that I own it when you're kind of walking around and managing it and stuff like that. It can get a little dicey if you're living in one of the units and something happens next door, or, you know, how people are, the landlord never changes my ceiling fan. I told you 15 times and they live next to you. It can create some tension just between tenants and things like that. So if you can keep it separate, cool. But if you can't, it's still worth it. And the whole point is you want to live in it for the minimum about a year, 2 years, and then you can move out and buy another property and do the same thing. So, I mean, if you bought a fourplex every 2 years for, 6 years, it's really cool. You're going to have 3 of those things. And if you live in it for 2 years, you can get rid of the capital gains tax if you sell it. But if you just live in it for 1 year, which is kind of the intended minimum, then you would still have to pay that tax if you sell. So that capital gains tax is a big thing that I'm trying to avoid right now. If you bought let's just say you buy one of these fourplexes, this is your plan. You live in one for 2 years and you want to sell it to buy a bigger property or buy yourself a big personal house or whatever you want to do, you would have to pay about 34% of what the gain has been in equity on the property since you purchased it. So if you bought it for $400 and it's worth $500 in 2 years, you have to pay 34% of $100,000 after your expenses to close. And you'd have to pay all of that in taxes. And so it hurts. It's a lot of money. But when you're talking about $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 gains, it adds up a lot. So They do this thing called a 1031 exchange, and it allows you to defer the taxes and kick them onto another property to kind of avoid that and level up. And I'll explain that here later. But after you get that first property, you want to move out at some point and either rent that thing out or sell it and level up again. I recommend just moving out of that one and just keep doing it over and over. And keep building up units is the best way. Super low barrier of entry. I mean, if you could buy a fourplex for $400,000 at 3% down, it only cost you $12,000. And you know, you'd have a little bit of a mortgage to pay, what was left after the rents, but it would pencil out for you to live there. And being an owner occupied, you could get, I mean, today maybe a 6.2-6.3 rate. And really make some money on the back end. That's how you build wealth and stuff. Super easy way with a super low barrier of entry. If you had to come up with $12,000, I'm sure you could. You could do a non-owner occupied co-borrower, which is if you've got a family member or someone who would be willing to put their income and their kind of name on the line for that property to guarantee the debt. You can get in that way too. Maybe one person brings the down payment and the other person guarantees the debt. If your income isn't high enough, there's some crafty stuff you can do to get yourself a property. And if you don't get a property, but you really want to, there's just really no excuse in my opinion. If the difference was between you dying and buying a 4-unit property this year, you would be buying a 4-unit property. I would guarantee it. So if there's a will, there's a way. Get out there and get creative and find a way to build that wealth for yourself. So as you kind of build these units owner-occupied and grow, you're gonna start growing some equity and you're going to get some appreciation. This is the point in which you kind of constantly have to be looking at your properties and analyzing them. You can't just set it and forget it, in my opinion. Some people buy a house and they just don't even think about it for 30 years. They pay their mortgage off and then they get all their cash flow without a mortgage and they're happy. I'm constantly evaluating the portfolio to see what I can change, what I can upgrade, you know, what things we can do better on and things like that. So I have a property right now with a partner that is 3 units in downtown, and we have about $240,000 worth of equity in the property after all of our selling expenses, commissions, and closing costs. And we want to do a 1031 exchange, which allows us to take that $240,000 profit on the property, buy another larger property with it, and not pay any taxes. We just roll over that equity into another property and we keep moving. So it's a really, really, really cool way to avoid taxes and maximize the cash that you've made in real estate. If we just sold it, took the cash, put it in our bank account, and then went to go buy something else, we would have to pay about $85,000 in taxes before we could go buy another property. So you think about that chunk of money at a 10% return, you know, you're throwing away $700 a month in cash flow just right there. So looking at this property, we've both been kind of analyzing it and thinking what we can do. It's been a little bit of a headache for us. It took a ton of work. We had to rewire the house and I had an electrician fall through the ceiling and just all these things happen that it just has been a little bit of a thorn in our side lately. So we've always kind of had it on our radar to get rid of, even though it cash flows really well. It brings about $1,500 a month. We just kind of want to level up and upgrade. We've got some opportunities coming up to possibly get something larger. So we want to do that. So looking at this property to decide whether it's time to keep it and keep cash flowing or sell it, which is something after house hacking or buying an investment property or two, you'll want to do is just kind of evaluate and just see where it's at, see how you can maximize, because each of these properties are like levers that you can pull to make more money, make more equity, and just kind of work with them and just make the machines as profitable as you possibly can. So like I said, some people like to set it and forget it and just forget the fact that they have a rental property. But I really think that you need to be looking at it and focus on how you can maximize that property while you can, because you don't want to fast forward 10 years and, you know, think, man, if I would have sold that thing and bought this, I would have this. You kind of got to look 10 years down the road and see what makes the most sense and just be pivoting and constantly be upgrading to grow as much wealth as you possibly can. So looking at this property, we're looking at return on equity. So return on equity is the amount of equity that you have in the property and how much money the property is making you in cash, and kind of see if that number lines up and makes any sense. The hardest part about return on equity that I've heard people talking about, even on Facebook and Instagram and all this stuff, is nobody accounts for the costs to actually sell the property. If you have if you bought a house for $200,000 and it's worth $300,000, you technically do not have $100,000 worth of equity. I mean, on paper you do, but you'll have to pay 5-6% to the real estate agents for commissions. You'll have to pay 3% for closing costs. There's other things factored in that you need to take out of that to look at what you actually would realize when you sell that property. So all those things into account, we've got about $240,000 worth of equity in this property, and it brings about $1,500 per month. So that is a 7.5% return on equity. Now, there are other factors to look at when you're evaluating these properties, because there's things like depreciation, there's things like loan pay down, appreciation. There's a lot of other factors that come into owning a property and benefits of that that are really hard to quantify. We do get a write-off because we take depreciation on the property, but it's different every year and it just kind of depends. Playing the tax game, it is also worth buying a property and being able to take the bonus depreciation. Bonus depreciation is basically a tax strategy that allows you to write off all of the fixtures, sinks, faucet, all of the interior kind of non-building aspects of the property over 27 and a half years. And you take that number and you can write all of that off year one. So on this property, we did not do that. When we put it into service, we just ran it and took the regular depreciation amount on the building, which is nice because now that we sell it, we will have to capture all of that depreciation back, but it's only been a few years, so it won't be super heavy. If you took a $150,000 tax depreciation benefit in year one, when you took bonus depreciation on a property, you'll have to realize that depreciation when you sell the property, which is, you know, if you get rid of that thing, you'll have to pay all the taxes back that you saved by depreciating that property. So some people that are buying these apartment complexes and taking massive write-offs, $2-3 million write-offs, if you sell that property ever, you will have to pay those taxes again on the back end. You just got to decide if it's worth it or doing, you know, to do that or not. A lot of people bag on Trump for not paying any taxes. I didn't pay any taxes in 2023, this or that. It's because he bought a $100 million apartment complex and was able to write off $40 million in depreciation. And that was his income for the year or whatever that looked like. So it's a really powerful tool. You just have to stick onto that property. If you ever do sell it, you'll have to pay back that $40 million of tax benefit on the back end. So looking at this property that we have, we are going to get rid of it at this point because the return on equity is 7.5%. Now, when we bought it, it was a 300 property, so we had to put 25% down because it was a non-owner occupied investment property. We bought it for $240,000. That was about $60,000 down with some closing costs and stuff to it as well. The property was bringing in at that point about $2,400 per month, and our payment was about $1,000. So it was just about $1,400 in cash flow. But you do pay some of the bills because the meters aren't separated. So we pay about $500 a month in bills. It's only cash flowing about $900 day one. But still good, because if you think about it, with closing costs and down payment, we're in $65,000. That's a 16% cash on cash return. as in cash in versus cash out, 16%. That's killer. That's a home run. I was super, super excited to be able to have that. Now, we did remodel the front house. It's a big two-bedroom house, 12-foot ceilings, about 1,000 square feet, and it's built in 1904, so it needed some help, and we put maybe $15,000 to $20,000 into that. But then that raised that rent about $450 as well after that work was done. So even if from that perspective, putting $20,000 in, almost getting $500 a month back, that's a 25% right there on the work that we did. So we were doing really good on this property. COVID hit and the property prices just exploded. So we got a really good bump in appreciation on that. The house is now worth, or the property is now worth about $475. And we're going to cash out about $240. So I just looked at what we could sell this thing for versus what we can buy and use this money towards. So if we sold it all, we'd net $240. We can do a 1031 exchange into another property. Now, if we don't want to spend a dollar of our own money, we have to look at what we can buy with this equity now. So to do that math, you're going to take the gain, $240, and divide it by 20% as a 20% down payment. That gives you $1.2 million. So in theory, we could go out and buy a $1.2 million property at 20% down with no money out of our pockets besides some closing costs and some inspection fees here and there. The reason why I did 20% instead of 25% is I do have a commercial lender who's able to do a 20% commercial loan on a large multifamily property. So in these numbers in our area, 1.2 million gets you a 10 to 12 unit apartment complex. So as soon as you get over four units, it's technically a commercial property and all the financing changes. So knowing that we've got this money that we're able to put back to work, I can start looking at deals for around 1.2 million and see if we can pull the trigger on something like that. Now, the return on equity we were getting was 7%, but the return on investment that we were getting was about 16%, that ROI. In my opinion, the commercial game, once we get into that, it's all played different. For me, I'm young, I'm 28 years old, so I'm not dying for cash flow right now to be able to quit my job and retire and just live on a beach somewhere. I'm looking to build some real wealth and kind of make this situation as best as I can in the future. So the commercial properties are valued based on how much money they make. If you raise your rents 10%, the property value in turn moves up 10% based on the cap rate. The cap rate is the NOI divided by the value. I won't get too far into the weeds on cap rate right now. I will do an episode in the future on commercial properties and how to value them and all of that. Hopefully I'll do that episode if we get a nice big one locked up here at some point soon. So knowing that I've got a 16% cash on cash return and a 7% return on equity, I'm really trying to bump up the return on equity so that I can maximize the property value that I'm buying. And if the market goes up 3-4%, 3% of 400,000 is a lot less than 3% of 1.2 million. So I'm really trying to get as much as I can so I can maximize all of those factors that come with a larger property. So the depreciation is more, the tax benefits are more, the appreciation is more, and oftentimes the cash on cash return is more too, because of the more units you get, kind of the sweeter the deals get. It's so hard to make a single family house cash flow. If you buy one for $250,000, it's probably not going to rent for $2,500 bucks a month, at least in my area. But the more units you get, the more closer you get to that kind of 1% rule where the rent is 1% of the purchase price. It's kind of where you want to land in terms of rentals. So I'm looking at one right now that is an 8-unit apartment complex. It's currently listed for $849. And the mortgage payment on something like that would be about $4,400. It's currently making about $70,000 in net income per year, which is about $5,800 per month net. But after the service of that mortgage, we'd only be cash flowing about $1,400 per month. Now, we put $240,000 down. We're cash flowing $1,400 per month. If we go back to the property that we're selling, we have $240,000 in equity, and we're cash flowing about $1,400 per month at a 7% ROI. Now, the numbers are almost exactly the same. So our return on equity was 7%. Now, our cash on cash return is 7% because we actually put that cash down. So that equity converts to cash, where before our cash on cash return was 16% and our return on equity was 7%. So if you think about it, you probably look at this deal and say, wow, 7% cash on cash return, that's not that good. I mean, you put $240,000 down and you're only making $1,400 per month. That's not worth it, right? You almost put $250,000 as a down payment. You're making $1,400. It would take you a long time, about 12, 13 years to pay yourself back for that initial investment. But with these larger properties, they are a different play. It's not exactly a full cash flow floating game, although that will come later and it will be sweeter. But right now we're just looking to take a big property down and have some appreciation over the next 5, 6, 7 years, do some tenant improvements, get rents up, get this property valued more, and then 1031 into something larger again. So that's the deal there. It's just to keep leveling up and leveling up. From our perspective, yeah, take some time and work, find the deal, evaluate it. But we're just moving money from one property to another. So cash out of our pocket is really zero. And the cash flow that we're getting is the same exact amount. So in theory, we're not changing anything at all. We're just swapping a $475,000 house for an $850,000 8-unit property. The one thing I don't like is that this property I could technically get, if I got it for $800, because it's been on the market for a while, I could put $160,000 down. And my mortgage would be higher, but I wouldn't even have to use all of that $240,000. So I really want to maximize this 1031 that we're doing and put all of it and just juice as much as we can. So like I said, with $240,000, I could afford a $1.2 million complex. I'd really like to get as close to $1.2 million as I can, because sometimes you can cheat cash flow where some buyers will buy a house cash for $300,000. They'll rent it out for $2,000 and they'll say, I'm making $2,000 a month cash flow. This is so awesome. This is so awesome. When you're getting a horrible return, and the only reason why you're getting $2,000 a month in cash flow is because you paid cash. So I don't want to just put a higher down payment down, make some cash flow, and just be excited that we're making cash flow because we kind of forced it that way because we put so much more money down. I'd rather buy two properties or the larger property that I can. In this situation, I'd rather have a $1.2 million apartment complex and cash flow $200 than I would an $850,000 complex and cash flow $1,400. Just that asset wise and kind of the way that America's going, I think that inflation is going to keep going and these prices are just going to keep going up and up and up. There's a lot more institutional money now too, looking for large multifamily properties. So I think in the future, we'll be able to find a really good buyer and get this thing closed up, especially after we do some improvements and get rents stabilized where they should be and just clean it all up. I think, you know, we have a good kind of niche in making these things look good and attractive and make buyers want to buy. So I think it's like a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old hold, and we'll see what goes on from there. Hopefully we can cash out, I don't know, maybe 500 or 600,000 and then put that into a $3 million property or something like that, where the numbers get really nice and just keep kind of going on that trajectory with some of the other properties that we have to kind of maximize the cash that we got here. So anyway, that's kind of the trajectory for a real estate investor. You really need to focus on getting that first deal getting some equity and being able to move those pawns where you need to be able to maximize it. So don't just sit on your properties. If you have any, we've got a personal house right now. I'm sure you can take a home equity line of credit out on it. Just look at what the numbers are and see what makes the most sense to be able to get out there and just maximize that return. Any questions you have, or if you need any help running numbers like return on equity or deciding what you should do, please just send me a DM on Instagram at Jake Myers, J-A-K-E-M-I-R-E-S, and I'll be happy to help you out. Until next time, keep investing.